Just because you know how to do the work of the business, it doesn't mean you're going to be good at running a business that does the work. I knew a lot about cutting hair. I knew a lot about teaching people how to cut hair. Running a business was a completely different skill set.
When I shut mine in 2011, it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done.
Me too.
Thought it was going to break me, and it was only really my wife just kind of, you know, Tony, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
I was getting sick. And there's a point where you kind of go, no, I'm done. I'm actually damaging myself.
Yeah, exactly.
It is just a shop. You've still got to look after yourself in all of this. Yeah, yeah.
It's your accountant's job to file a set of financial accounts at the end of the year and make sure you're paying the right amount of tax.
Yeah.
It's not their job to tell you how to reduce your overhead, how to increase your revenue, how to pay your people, how to work out your inventory, all that sort of stuff. They don't know.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban, and this is the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here this morning with Anthony Whittaker from Grow My Salon Business.
That's the one.
Well done. Thank you so much for coming up.
My pleasure.
I've been wanting to talk, since we've been doing this for the last, year, I've been wanting to have someone talk to us about the actual nuts and bolts of having a business.
Yep.
The resounding sentence that gets used by a lot of business owners is, oh, that's all done by my accountant, or an awful lot of imposter syndrome. Like, you know, I keep pinching myself. I shouldn't really be doing it. I'm quite lucky that I'm doing it, and all that kind of stuff. And I think that kind of backbone of business, which is why I wanted to get you on. So thank you very much.
No, my pleasure. But,
if you could give us a bit of a rundown of how you ended up becoming a business guru or coach or whatever the right phrase is.
All right. Well, condensed version of the story. Started hairdressing a very long time ago, 1978. Worked at Sassoon from 1980 to 1990 on the sort of art team side of the business in the London salons and schools. And then I moved to Australia and I opened up my own salons out there and realized that thing that so many people realize in business, which is that just because you know how to do the work of the business, in our case, hairdressing or barbering or running a restaurant or, you know, a clothing store or being a lawyer or a chef or whatever it is, just because you're good at the work that goes on within the business, it doesn't mean you're going to be good at running a business that does the work. And that's a really important sentiment. And I realized that very quickly, that as a salon owner, that I knew a lot about cutting hair. I knew a lot about teaching people how to cut hair, but running a business was a completely different skill set. And you either learn and you learn fast or you don't survive. And so I learned and I learned fast. And I realized that, you know, I really had to focus on that because, you know, my business grew very quickly, not through, you know, any incredible business acumen, but through a series of lucky breaks. And I had three salons and a school within about 3 or 4 years, which sounds fantastic. And I'd love to take credit for that as being like, I'm a business genius, but that just wasn't the case. And I realized at that point that I was generating a lot of money, but I weren't keeping any. I was spending more than I was making. And so I consolidated my business and, you know, started to learn more about business basically. And then, because a lot of my background, especially at Sassoon, was education, I've always had a strong education, you know, focus with everything I've done. So I'd be out on the road teaching people how to cut hair. And what would happen is the audience would sort of start asking me, how do you train your staff? Or what do you look for when you recruit people? Or how do you pay people? So bit by bit, I started talking more about the business side of success.
Right.
And then one of the manufacturers approached me and asked if I would, you know, do a talk about business without doing a haircut, because we're all good at talking, but with a pair of scissors in our hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you take the scissors away and you're standing on a stage in front of an audience and you've got to talk, it's like, well, what do you mean I can't do a haircut at the same time? It's a different thing. And so that really pushed me out of my comfort zone. But anyway, I did it and it was an hour long talk and they loved it. And they said, we'd like you to do that again, but to do it all around the country. And instead of making it 1 hour, could you do it for 3 hours? And so I went, yeah, of course I can. So, you know, I turned it into a 3 hour thing, and one thing just grew after the other and it got bigger and bigger. And then, you know, as you get older, you start to realize that, you know, you need to evolve as a business person as well and diversify. And there was a lot of demand for business education. And so it didn't happen overnight, but I sort of, you know, evolved into being this business educator. I wrote a few books and made lots of videos. And then really for the last, what are we in now, 2024, you know, for the last 24 years or so, or 20 years, I've been 100% focused on the business side of things. So, yeah.
Wow. Well, I think that's the bit that always appealed when I started looking around is obviously, you know, you've got the legs for it. It's been, you've been around a while. And you've lived it.
Yeah.
And I think, I think without having gone through the kind of highs and low of running a business, it all can seem a bit false.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I'm seeing more and more around the hairdressing and barber industry that are just a bit thin on their experience of business.
Yeah.
And they're kind of reciting what they've learned. And I think it means more when you've got a few scars and
to show what you've
totally. Achieved.
Totally. Yeah.
Now, I keep coming back to kind of our barber world tacked against hairdressing. And I think yeah, there are definitely barbershops that are very adamantly barbershops. We are barbers, we're not hairdressers, and, and that's great. And that's, you know, obviously part of our following and part of our kind of culture. But there is the kind of, I keep saying modern barbering, I don't know if it's the right phrase, but the kind of new wave of young barbershop owners feel more akin or seem to be following that kind of well-trodden hairdressing path. Some are calling themselves men's styling salons. Some are calling themselves men's salons. And all the way through, I'm just seeing this kind of resounding mistakes that I've seen the hairdressing industry make happening in the barbering industry as it's growing. And I think there is a moment where you have a barber shop, you've got a couple of mates that are working with you, you've found a couple of good barbers, it's flying, you found a niche, your clients are there. And all the other bits, the bits that you've been focusing on, get kind of shoved in a cupboard and ignored. And that's the kind of nagging fear in your early days as a business owner that worry you, that keep you awake at night.
Yeah.
And so what I wanted to have, asking a lot in a short conversation is to try and give all of us that kind of confidence to open that door and sift through all the stuff that we've been hiding. Because it's... the successful companies do that.
Yep.
There is not a single successful company that's turned into a franchise or run out a company or run out a set of stores or has a great income from it that hasn't at some point sifted through that dark cupboard.
Yeah, exactly. So where do I start with that?
Well, I guess one of the things we've got coming up is, you know, I think there's been a big push, and we've done it here, about VAT.
Yeah.
A lot of barbering companies are staying underneath this 96 grand.
Yeah. Threshold. Yeah.
And, you know, that could change. There's lots of conversations that Rachel Reeves will be dropping that barrier and it comes down. And so, you know, the taxation is obviously one of the worries. We have a lot of independents, a lot of freelancers that are turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah. Well, okay, you've opened up a huge can of worms there. No, that's okay. That's okay. It is... it's sort of that thing I alluded to, that just because you're good at the job, i.e. barbering, doesn't mean you're going to be good at running a business. And it's like every business in every sector, whether we're talking hairdressing, barbering, restaurants, whatever, has got four sort of fundamental pillars. One of them is finance. One of them is marketing. One of them is the people component, the HR. And the fourth one is the operations bit. And the operations bit is the bit that we're good at.
Yeah.
That's the running the barbershop. It's the doing the hair and making a place look cool and you know, giving people a cup of tea or whatever it is. It's like the operations people have got down pat. So they think, well, why am I working for, you know, Muggins over here when I can go and open my own business and get to keep all the money? Because there's so much naivety.
Yeah.
And it's not just barbering. This is in... and it's not just hairdressing. This is sort of small business across the board that there's a huge amount of naivety. And you alluded to this right at the beginning where you said, you know, about people go, well, my accountant looks after all that. And, you know, it's not your accountant's job to grow your business. It's not your accountant's job to make you successful. It's your accountant's job to you know, file a set of financial accounts at the end of the year and make sure you're paying the right amount of tax.
Yep.
It's not their job to tell you how to reduce your overhead, how to increase your revenue, how to pay your people, how to work out your inventory, all that sort of stuff. They don't know necessarily how to do that any more than you do. And in fact, because, you know, you got your feet on the ground and you're in the industry, you would probably have a much better idea than what the accountant would about what those benchmarks, et cetera, are. So yes, you need an accountant, and you need a good accountant that can do that for you. And in a lot of cases, you need a bookkeeper. You know, the bookkeeping side of our industry is not that complex because, you know, we're a cash business. You know, like you don't have anyone on 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. Do you know what I mean? They come and they get their haircut, they pay the money, they walk out the door. And if you're running a halfway decent business, they're going to be back in a month in the barbering business, you know? So you've got good return business, you've got good cash flow. So in theory, it's actually a simple business model to run. And you can, you know, you can get by with a minimum of, you know, financial business acumen. But getting by isn't enough for a lot of people. And so what a lot of people do is they, you know, they open one barber shop and they go, hey, I've got the Midas touch here. This is you know, great. I better open another one. And then they might open a second one. And what they end up with is two half businesses. Mm-hmm. Because like the business is successful, it's usually successful because you're in there. You're in there pulling all the levers, making all the decisions, doing all the things. And as soon as you're not in there and you've got two barbershops, then they start sort of veering off in the wrong direction often. Yeah. So there's a lot more to it than just having, you know, a small shop with, you know, two or three people on, you know, a straight commission or whatever it is. That's a pretty easy thing to do and to get right. But if you want to grow, if you want to evolve, if you want to create something bigger, then it does become a lot more complex than that. And this is an area where the barbering side of the industry and the, you know, the ladies' hairdressing side of the industry do tend to be more different. Like barbering has for a long time had, you know, quite a strong, you know, chair renter, you know, 50-50 sort of business model to it. Far more so than the ladies' side of the industry. The ladies' side of the industry has had a much stronger employee-employer, you know, relationship. But certainly over the last 10 years, that's changed dramatically. I mean, you know, depending on what statistics you rely on, they'll say now that somewhere between 65 and 70% of hairdressers in the industry are now self-employed. And that's not just in the UK. You know, the US is the same, Australia is the same. It's a big push in that direction. But interestingly, it's being driven by different things. In the UK, you mentioned it, VAT. VAT is one of the big drivers that are pushing people, salons and barbershops, to make people self-employed. The other component that's driving it is, you know, Gen Z, you know, this new generation of people that they want the freedom, they want the flexibility, they want the autonomy, they want to come and go as they please. So that's a driver everywhere, no matter which country you're in. The VAT thing is a uniquely a British thing, because that isn't what's happening in America. There, it's just much more about the land of opportunity. I can do my own thing, so to speak. Yeah. In the Australian market, where I worked for 14 years, what's driving it there, as well as Gen Z, is the employment laws are so heavily weighted in so many ways against the employer. So you've got to give so many benefits to employees that a lot of salon owners are going, I just can't make any money out of this. So I'm making people self-employed. So, you know, the common denominator is Gen Z. And then in different countries, you also have this other thing that's driving it. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. You mentioned, you know, Rachel Reeves, new Labour government, they're going to be changing employment laws. What are they going to do with the VAT? Who knows? Are they going to lower that threshold? I mean, it is ridiculous that the hairdressing industry has the same VAT levels that other businesses do, because we don't have any way of clawing any of that back. But I can't see them changing that either, like just for an industry, because look at it from their point of view. They're going to have, you know, the next industry put their hand up and go, hey, what about us? Yeah. You know, So anyway,
That's all right. No, I think the big one is really Ireland has had this change that they've dropped down to 13% on service.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes a big difference.
Yeah, sure.
I think the more likelihood, and who knows, well, we'll find out in about 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
That the threshold will come down. Which is kind of the worst of both worlds in the fact that we'll end up with more employment regulation.
Yeah.
And a lower threshold that makes all of that more complicated.
Yeah, exactly.
But what we have got is we've got a huge growth business in barbering. You know, as much as people complain about, there's another barbers in a high street, it's all barbershops and all that kind of stuff. We are seeing this kind of surge that exactly that. Mm. Barbers are kind of going, I can do this.
Yeah.
And they're opening up. And obviously some are succeeding.
Yeah.
But we are finding that a lot are either the kind of older barbers that are having to switch and move around.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I do, in every single one of person I've spoken to or met is the discipline that comes from barbering and hairdressing, of standing behind the chair, of running your business, of looking after your clients.
Mm.
Like you say, the kind of actual running of the day to day.
Yeah.
Is a huge focus discipline.
Mm.
Whereas this blind side to the finances.
Mm.
Is so intimidating to some people. And I've spoken to more and more who've started working with coaches. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah.
If you start working with someone, I'm not trying to make this a sales pitch for you.
At all.
But
yeah.
if you're starting to work with someone and you meet a barber from here and I came to you and said, look, this is what I'm up to.
Mm.
Where do you start? What's your kind of step one of looking through? When you were from the outside and you look through someone's business.
Yeah.
What's your start point? What's day one for you?
It does depending on why that person's contacted me. Okay, but generally speaking, I want to look at the numbers because the numbers will tell you what's going on in the business. Like everyone's got a story. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes someone will get in touch with me and go, Anthony, all my staff have left. I need to talk to you about recruitment. So we might start with recruitment. Yeah. But given you know, all things being equal, I will generally want to start with, you know, I mean, look, stories are relevant and finding out people's background and what's going on for them. All of that has a place. But ultimately, at the end of the day, businesses are about numbers. And people will tell lies, but numbers don't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the numbers
say,
well, look, you know, your story about that is relevant, but this is what the numbers say. So it is a business. And so the numbers are what business is all about. And if a business is failing and if a business isn't profitable, all of that will be seen in the numbers really quickly. So I generally want to get to reliable numbers, meaning profit and loss report. And it's not as intimidating as what people make all that. I used to be intimidated by all that. Yeah. Look, I remember when I opened my first salon in Australia and I went to my accountant. I think it was my second year in business. And I went into his office and none of us want to think we're stupid. We like to think we're bright, intelligent people. Everybody
Absolutely.
Does.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can remember my accountant sitting down with me and going through the trading accounts for the year and wanted me to sign off on every page. And so I'm trying to ask some intelligent questions that, like, do you know what I mean? Like, like, was I profitable and how much and whereabouts is it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the line, he said to me, look, you know, yeah, you made $16,000 in this case profit. And I'm sort of thinking, well, literally, where is it? Mm. Do you know what I mean? And so I'm trying to understand the profit and loss. And I will never forget this. He sort of rocked back in his chair and looked down his nose at me as if to say, look, you look after the hairdressing, let me look after the numbers side of it. And I just thought, you know what? This is my business. And if my business is to grow, if my business is to succeed, I need to understand what's going on. And a profit and loss is not that complicated. It's really just saying, this is what came in and this is where it came from. And this is what went out and this is where it went out to. And this is what is left. And you know, you should be able to read and understand what's in a profit and loss so that you can then start asking some intelligent questions to your accountant and actually say, well, listen, why are you doing it this way instead of doing it that way? You know, and making them a little bit more answerable because if you've got a good accountant, they can really help you make some smart decisions about your business and, you know, so that you're profitable and that you can grow because, you know, oftentimes, so that's the first place I'll start with the profit and loss. And then the second place, directly connected to that, is I want to do some benchmarking to see what percentages of your revenue are going out in certain key areas. So what percentage is going out in occupancy costs? Usually rent. Sometimes it's mortgage, but usually rent. You know, what percentage is going out in inventory? The stuff that you use, professional use inventory in a salon. Now in a barbershop, that's usually pretty low. In a salon, that could be quite high because, you know, they do a lot of color, et cetera. And then what percentage is going out in retail? So to replace the retail that you're selling. And the big one is employee costs. What percentage is going out in employee costs? And then I have another category, which I just call all remaining costs. And all remaining costs is exactly what it says, whether it's your cleaning, your accountancy fees, your bank fees, your insurance, all remaining costs. Yeah. And so when you then start to group the stuff on a P&L into a few simple categories, you can see straight off where the problem is, whether it's like, hey, your inventory costs are through the roof. That's why you're not profitable. Or what is typically the one, your employee costs are killing you. That is why you're not profitable. And so once you then know that, you can then look at, well, what are the levers that I need to pull here? Because if your employee costs are ridiculously high, it either means that you're not that you're not charging enough for your services, or you're paying people too high a percentage of what their take is, or a combination of the two. So, you know, once you've then gone through that, so profit and loss to benchmarking to then looking at pricing. And how did you work out your pricing? Now, in this industry, hairdressing, barbering, and other, you know, small businesses, how they work out their pricing is so bad, you know. And so often it's based on, well, I used to work for Anthony, so I'm going to charge what Anthony charges, less $5 or more $5. Do you know what I mean? £5, whatever. And whereas, look, there's nothing wrong with knowing that, like, Anthony's got a salon down the road. What's he charging? There's nothing wrong with knowing what he's charging. But what you really need to know is, well, what does it cost me to run my business? Because I don't know what your rent is. I don't know what your, you know, like, I've got a client, a coaching client that I work with at the moment, and his rent is zero. And it's like, hang on, what do you mean your rent's zero? He says, well, my dad owns the building and he lets me run a salon on here rent free. So you don't know that sort of stuff as a competitor to him. But if you've got zero rent, well, you can pay a higher percentage in employee costs. But most people don't have zero rent. You know, I got people who have, say, 5 or 10% rent. I got people that are paying 15 or 20% rent. I got one person who's paying 27% rent, and that person's not going to last in business because, not because Anthony says, but because the calculator says. You know, they're just running backwards. So, you know, I'll go back to what I said before. We're lucky in our industry. We don't have 30, 60, 90 days. We don't have research and development department. We don't have, you know, storage costs and all that sort of stuff. You come in, you get your haircut, you pay the money, you walk out the door. Do you know what I mean? And you're back again. It's a simple business model, but you need to get the basics right. And if you don't, it will hang you. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think that's where I'm finding talking to an awful lot of people that they're seeing their shop, they're seeing the money come in the till, they're like, we're so busy. And hey, you know, our industry will always tell you they're busy. But yeah, these are guys that I know have got successful businesses day to day. They've got money coming in the till, the card machine's going crazy, all happy days. But they're coming to the end of their year. Tax bills, and that's like, I just end up with no money. I don't know where it's going. And so it is a matter of, you think, really, if you know, on a sheet of paper, you know what your fixed costs are, you know what's going out every month. That, by just looking through that, you can start finding out where your problem is.
And your accountant can't do that. Or your accountant can to a degree. But you think about your accountant for a minute. Your accountant has got a barbershop that he looks after. He's got a restaurant he looks after. He's got a hardware store he looks after. He's got all these different types of businesses. You know, now, if you take our industry as a benchmark, you would typically say, about 50% of what comes in is going to go out in employee costs. Well, imagine if we had a clothing shop. So if we had and we'd also say inventory, probably, you know, in a barbershop it's going to be lower than this, but, you know, somewhere between 5 and 10% is going to be tied up in inventory. Barbershop is probably going to be lower than that. But you imagine your clothing shop. Well, if you're a clothing shop, you're going to have a hell of a lot more than 5 or 10% in inventory, but you're not going to have anywhere near 50% going out in employee costs. Now, every business, every type of business has different metrics, different benchmarks. It's not your accountant's job to understand what those metrics and benchmarks should be for all these different industries. That's your job to figure that out. And if you're not prepared to do it, then you shouldn't be in business. Do you know what I get? Really hardcore about that with people that go, oh, I'm just a hairdresser, I'm just a barber. It's like, well, you shouldn't have opened a business if you're not prepared to understand and learn the fundamentals.
Step up and learn what's
and again, it's not complicated. It's like, what does it cost you to run your business and cover all your overhead? Yeah. Like, what does that cost you? And then how much do you want to make in profit on top of that? So now you've got a nice big round number. And right, what do we need to work out as our pricing in order to cover that number? Yeah. Cover all the overhead and give you the X thousand a year in profit that you want to make, and then you've got something that you can work to, you know.
So, and I always think pricing's a really interesting one, certainly in barbering. I mean, I think hairdressing, you'll find the entire gambit. You know, we could probably walk for about 15 minutes around here and we'd find a shop that was charging 40 quid for a haircut, and you'd find somewhere that was charging £150 a haircut.
Yeah. Oh, you'd probably find one that's charging 10.
Oh, right. Well. You know what I mean? We've really got that whole gambit.
Yeah.
And presumably, you know, it each business works for itself.
Yeah.
Now, I took a wander the other double. I was seeing our mutual friend, Andrew Jose, and walking through Fitzrovia, very expensive bit of London.
Yeah.
Walked through Berwick Street, through Soho, which has got to be the most condensed amount of hairdressers and barbers I've seen.
Yeah.
And again, talking from people on this. We tend to find barbering goes from about 25 to 35 quid a haircut, regardless of where you are. I mean, I walked through Berwick Street and saw Ted's, very expensive, good-looking shop, good reputation, £38 for a gent's haircut. Three doors down was a very average-looking salon, and on their price list, I just stopped to have a look, £43 a haircut.
Yeah.
And we seem to have this disparity that between what hairdressers are charging men, because men's not a big part of their business. In fact, they possibly even want to not have the guys in there taking up a chair.
Yeah.
As opposed to barbers that are all huddled in this kind of £10 bracket between 25 and 35.
Yeah.
I'd be really dubious to say any have sat down and looked at their overhead, their costs, sat down and gone through it and gone, right, with everything this business is going to cost me, the magic number for a haircut is 35 quid.
Yeah. Well, there's two things there that are really important. They're completely opposite ends of the spectrum that you need to consider. One of them is the legal ramifications about, like, if my wife comes into a salon and has a 1 hour appointment and gets a haircut and it costs her 60 quid or whatever, and then I go into the same salon and get my haircut and it costs me 35 quid, like, what's that all about? Now, you can rattle on about your training and your tools and your God knows what. No one cares. That's not legal to do. Now, you can charge men 30 quid for a haircut, 20 quid for a haircut, 10 quid for a haircut if you want. But legally, if you say men are 25 quid and women are 40 quid and they both have the same amount of time allocated to them, you don't have a leg to stand on in a court of law. Yeah. You don't have a leg to stand on. Like, and if you think about it, like, that just makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
Now, we have a history of men get charged a lot less than what women do. And women are prepared to pay more for it. So if you've got a salon that does men and women, more and more of them are now just doing one price for both. So what are they doing? Are they reducing the price of their women's haircuts? Not really. They're increasing the price of their men's haircuts because, you know, and this has been an ongoing thing for years, and it will just continue in that direction. If we fast forward 20 years' time, it won't even be a discussion that men pay less than women in the same salon. It's perfectly legal and nothing wrong with it if you're saying a woman's haircut is 1 hour and a man's haircut is 30 minutes. Yeah. Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that. Then saying that the woman's haircut's 60 quid, the man's haircut's 30. Perfectly fine with that. So it's that relationship, not just the legal issue, men and women, okay, with allocated appointment times, but it's also the relationship when we talk about the barbershop and why is one barbershop charging 20 or even 10? I could take you to barbershops not far from here that was going to be still charging 10 yeah. quid haircut. And as you said, there'll be someone else charging 100, 150, whatever. You can charge 10 quid. I'm really happy for you to do that. Just do a lot of them. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to charge 10 quid an hour, we all know barbershops that do that, they're doing 4, 5, 6 clients an hour. Yeah. But we also know barbershops that are charging, you know, I know a place that charge 110, but it's a 1 hour appointment and you get treated like a king, you know? So it's the relationship between time and money. So when people say to me, I can't afford to put my prices up, which I'll often say when I do that audit thing with them, it's like, well, therefore, you need to reduce the amount of time you're allocating for that haircut so that you can do more of them in a day. And it's not Anthony saying that. It's the calculator saying that. You know, so, and that's what I mean about the story. They always want to justify it with some emotional story about it. It's like, look, it's the numbers. Say these are your overheads, and you said this is the profit you want to make. So this is the amount of staff you've got. This is the amount of time you've got available. So you can calculate it to say this is what you need to be charging per minute. Yeah. So if you are going to take, you know, a 30-minute appointment, it's this per minute price times 30. That's a minimum you can charge to cover that. If you're going to take 45-minute appointments, you got to charge that per minute price times 45. That's what you got to charge. Where the problem lies is people say, well, I only want to do 45-minute appointments, but I can't possibly charge that much money. Yeah. It's like, well, figure it out, Bozo. The calculator says not going to work. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So
on the other side of that, if we can't do that...
Sorry, I do get a bit passionate about it sometimes.
But that's why I wanted you here, because I do think a lot of these conversations don't happen with other barbers.
It needs
to happen. We need to take a step away.
Mm.
Yeah. So the other side of that, if people are listening to this and they're just kind of like, yeah, I'm charging them. I'm the most expensive in my manor. I couldn't put it up anymore.
Yeah.
There's another 15 barbers just opened up round by me and all that kind of stuff. The other side of the metrics is what you're spending to earn that money. So presumably the other side is a bit of cost cutting and a bit of tidying up of what you're spending, what your wages are.
Yes.
I remember having a conversation about 5 or 6 years ago with a salon that was opposite my barbershop, or one of my barbershops, I won't give it away to who. And he was just in bits. He's like, I've been doing this 15 years. I'm not making any money.
Mm.
And I was just chatting to him. I said, you know what? I would get rid of your, you know, you're not doing training. You've got you've got people in there. You're pretending to train, but you're not really.
Yeah.
You haven't got the time for it. You're cutting the whole time.
Yeah.
And you've got 2 receptionists.
Yeah.
Get rid of your receptionists.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a great point of sale equipment now. Get rid of your receptionists.
Yeah.
Get your hairdressers to answer the phone.
Yeah.
Encourage your clients to book online.
Yeah.
And give your staff a little bit more time and get rid of the shampooing.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw him within 3 months and he was just like, I can't believe how much money I was spending.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And the business hadn't affected. Yeah. Everything was running really well. The hairdressers were actually happier because they were kept very occupied.
Yeah.
He wasn't so stressed that he was tracing down hairdressers sitting out the back having another coffee and mucking around on their phones while their apprentices shampooed for them.
Yeah.
And he was living this cleaner life that he just streamlined his business and went, actually, I'm making money out of this again.
Yeah.
So it can work the other way around.
It can. And there's another thing that we haven't touched on, but it underpins all of this when you talk about, you'd mentioned older guys in the industry, is that, you know, I mean, I'm older than you, maybe not that much, but I'm older than you.
We're staying in the same bracket, I think. Let's just stay nice and vague.
So when we started hairdressing, there weren't computers.
Mm.
That's how friggin' old we are. Do you know what I mean? There weren't computers.
Pencil and paper and that was it.
Bit by bit, computers have crept into the salon industry and the barbering industry. Now, you know, it's the same whether you're talking about, you know, restaurants, lots of other businesses out there used to run on a cash economy, you know, bakeries, the local fish and chip shop, whatever. And bit by bit, there's become a computerization of the industry. And that's not about to stop. It's not about to slow down. If anything, you know, the whole COVID thing put a rocket under it. Yeah. I get absolutely sick and tired of going into places now, getting my cash out and them saying, we don't take cash, yeah. It's only card. We have gone into more and more of a cashless society. So everything's got a paper trail. And in lots of industries, including the barbering industry and the salon industry, there was a certain amount of cash floating about. And that cash economy made it possible to run a viable business because you weren't paying tax, and or paying limited amounts of tax. And, you know, we can talk about that. If we can't talk about it in this environment, where the hell can we talk about that?
Of course.
And so what's happened is prices, all the money that is flowing through a business has now become a lot more transparent.
Yeah.
You can't hide any shit, you know. Whereas when I started, you know, like my boss had just opened the till at the end of the night when I very first started hairdressing, and he'd take a wad of cash out and go out for dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, those days are over.
Gone.
You know, and so the margins have just been squeezed. And so, and this comes right back to why I'm here now, is that if you're not running a good business, if you don't understand the numbers in your business, you are roadkill for tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because the margins are, as you said, people at companies saying, I'm working really hard, I'm just not making any dough.
Yeah.
And that's because it's just being squeezed. And, you know, under a Labour government, you know, I'm not saying what my political allegiances are one way or the other, but Australia is a really good example of a very strong Labour government culture. It makes it even harder for the small business owner to make money.
Yeah.
And as employment laws change and minimum wages go up and, you know, all that stuff about you got to pay people for every hour they're at work, every training session, every staff meeting, et cetera, it becomes harder and harder to make this work.
Yeah. And I think certainly in our industry, I mean, I employ everybody.
Yeah.
In the barbershops.
In the barbershops,
great. As well as in the stores. And
okay.
It actually can work against us a lot. A lot of guys come along wanting to be self-employed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if I'd done self-employed 10 years ago, I'd maybe feel differently about it.
Yeah.
But it feels like changing now, just as the boats could go into rocky waters, seems daft.
Yeah.
And, you know, those companies are the only ones that really are legally allowed to employ apprentices.
Yeah.
That we are allowed to train for tomorrow. We're allowed to bring people in.
Mm.
But we are seeing, you know, as a company, at the structure of my company, I'm having to really run through constantly.
Yeah.
Because it's much, much more difficult, you know, not just in the last few months of Labour government.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In the last 10 years of all the changes that have come on.
Yeah, exactly. What worked yesterday is not going to work today. You've got to, in every way, whether it's how you recruit people, what you expect of people, how you pay people, how busy you expect people to be, all of these things are in a constant state of flux. And, you know people, I know people that it's like, hey, listen, you're trying to run a business the way it was run in 1980 and that doesn't wash anymore.
Yeah.
Forget it.
I mean, we've got to a point now. We're talking about this hypothetical person that's chatting with you, and you. I'm assuming you've had this before. That there's a point where someone's looking at their business and they have a tough decision to make. Maybe you're pointing at the very obvious thing, or the process has made it very obvious to them.
Yeah,
we're all quite tied up emotionally in our businesses.
Mm.
You know, I certainly only know from my point of view. My barbershop companies, I'm really proud of. I really love them.
Yeah.
There's a very strong emotional commitment. I'm not like, oh, that's a business. Shut that one down. Do this. It hurts when, you know, I shut my business down in 2011.
Yeah.
And then had a lick some wounds, drew some breath, and then and then got back on the horse, so to speak. But it's emotionally, even with this one where I've kind of gone, right, I'm doing it differently, and we do it differently, I still have that emotional attachment.
Yeah.
How hard do you find it when you're coaching someone to kind of go, look, you got four shops, you know, you went from three shops, you consolidated, you know, which is a very nice turn of phrase to you shut some down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I make no bones about it.
It's, you know, ego or, you know, the sense of failure, the want to succeed, the whatever you want to put on it.
Mm.
If someone's watching this who has expanded, has grown, is doing their thing and is sleepless nights and struggling, if the answer is consolidating,
how do you
find your clients deal with that when you say to them, you know, the resounding factor is you've got four stores and only one of them's actually covering the cost of all of this kill three,
yeah,
and that one brings your bank balance back.
Yeah.
How is that journey for them?
It depends how much pain they're in. And I can, you know, like, okay, so quick backstory. I had three salons in school and I was losing money. Mm. And my accountant said to me, listen, you are heading towards bankruptcy. You need to do something and you need to do it quick. So, you know.
The cliff edge was pointed out.
Oh, yeah. Like the ego was like, and you know, like I won't go into the whole deal, but I ended up getting ill because of the stress and trying to work my way out of it. Mm. It was funny because I worked, because that's the first thing we do. We go, meaning you, the owner, will work harder.
Yeah.
I will work longer hours. I will work 6 days a week. I will work three late nights.
Fit more in or do more.
I will do half-hour appointments instead of one-hour appointments. I will stem the flow of money, you know, going backwards. But you can't do that forever. But that's what I decided to do, and that's our first port of call. And this comes right back to that thing at the beginning where we're good at doing hair. So that's our education. So that's what we use to try and solve our problems. But that's not going to solve your problem. That's a short-term fix. So I'm trying to do that. I lasted 3 months and I collapsed and I ended up with hiccups. Now, people would laugh. Oh, you had hiccups. Yeah. Big deal. It is a big deal when you got hiccups for 2 weeks and you're hospitalized and you can't sleep. And, you know, I was just like a complete, I was on a verge of a breakdown. You know, like your body says enough. So how much pain are you in before you go, do you know what? There's got to be a better way. Mm. And so, you know, for me, you know, I was 33 at the time and I was in hospital and with the hiccups for 2 weeks solid. They couldn't stop the bloody hiccups. You know, I couldn't sleep for more than 2 hours and, you know, and I'd wake up. It's exhausting.
It's fucking crazy. We'll do that to ourselves.
Totally.
In the name of cutting hair.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
But that's what I'm saying about this kind of emotional attachment. You know, when I shut mine in 2011, it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done.
Me too.
I thought it was going to break me, and it was only really my wife just kind of, you know, Tone, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah,
you've got to stop. I was getting sick.
Yeah.
And as soon as I shut it, like hours.
Yeah.
I felt better.
Of course.
It's so bizarre. I try and get that over, not because I'm trying to encourage people to shut down.
Yeah.
But I just don't want people to go through the pain that I went right to the edge. You know, I was not quitting. I am not a failure. I'm not going to. And there's a point where you kind of go, no, I'm done. I'm actually damaging myself.
Yeah, exactly.
It is just a shop. You've still got to look after yourself in all of it.
So that's what I did. Yeah. I closed two. And that wasn't as easy as close them tomorrow and walk away. It actually took 12 months to close one of them. It took time to get out of it. But the whole thing was, I need to consolidate and I need to learn how to run a business and build a business and what it takes.
And that was a big learner for you. Taking it apart and closing the doors is where you then went.
And I did that and I rebuilt and ended up again back at three salons. And then someone came along and wanted to buy my business. This is, you know, 6 years later, 7 years later. And I sold my business, you know, for a very, you know, handsome figure. And that was me in terms of that.
Yeah.
But
that's the bit I keep trying to say to people that, you know, I speak to a lot of people and, you know, I'm no business coach. I do my business.
Yeah.
I do this to meet people like yourself so we can sit and chat and share.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me is that maybe what you were doing, you're not a failure. You're not screwed. You're not stupid.
Yeah.
That business that you were running just wasn't happening.
Yeah, for all sorts of reasons.
There's always a brighter dawn, you know, and I think that's what I certainly found. You know, the company I've got, I had one store, a big store, that nearly killed me. And we now have, you know, a couple of salons, a couple of barbers. We have nice little stores.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
You know, and I've spoken to many, many people, and, you know, now yourself, that have been to that point.
Yeah.
Know, have found that actually you can't fix every business. You can't fix it by standing behind the chair.
Yeah.
And that's really why I wanted to talk to you and put this message out.
Yeah.
That have a look, fix your business, see what's wrong.
Yeah.
But it can't all sit on your shoulders. You know, it has to be the company has to survive. The business has to be viable.
Yeah.
It can't just be you standing behind a chair.
Yeah. And you know, you have to, especially if you've got multiple salons and you would have experienced this, for whatever reason, some of them are just better than the others.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes a business is a dog. And you don't even know why it's a dog. Do you know what I mean? It can be on the wrong side of the street. You know, it can be on the wrong level in the mall or the shopping center or whatever it is. It can be in the wrong location by 20 meters.
Yeah.
Or you've just got the wrong mix of staff, or, you know, there can be all sorts of things. I mean, I remember talking to Sean Hanna. I don't know if you know Sean. And, you know, at one point he had 11 or 12 salons. Yeah. And, you know, he's opened and closed them. And he very much sees them as it's a business. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And you've made money on some, you walk away on others. And you can't, you know, be too emotionally attached to it. You know, you got to look at it from the business perspective. And if it's not working, you've got to know, you got to do what you can to turn it around. But there's also got to be a point where you're prepared to pull up the drawbridge and say, okay, that didn't work.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, what are the lessons that you learn from it? And then move on.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is, it's learning the lessons. And I think, you know, I certainly found with my previous life, I refused to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
You know, next year, be all right.
Yeah,
suddenly I kind of release my inner Dell boy that next year it'd be billionaires, next year it'd be fine.
Yeah.
And there just comes a point where you kind of go, this is bust. I can't be in this room anymore. This building's not.
Yeah.
And that was for me, I think I reached a point where I suddenly looked at it and went, it's just a building.
Yeah.
It's just a building. I walk away, I'm still cutting hair. I'm not losing any of those skills, any of those.
And, you know, you look outside our industry. I mean, I was talking to someone the other day about this, and we were talking about Steve Jobs. And Apple, and Apple nearly went bankrupt.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they only survived because Bill Gates at Microsoft, he injected money into them. Otherwise, they were having to go bankrupt. And the only reason Bill Gates injected money into them is that he didn't want the government in the US to break up Microsoft.
Because
they would have said he had a monopoly on things. So he injected money into Apple. So, you know, I mean, most people will go, Steve Jobs, genius sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, listen, things go wrong for all sorts of reasons for everyone who's in business, and some of them work, some of them don't. You got to know, you know, when to close them down. And it's like someone once said this to me, not about a business, but about, it applies equally well to a business, about management. You know, they said to me, it was a management coach I had, you know, when I first opened my business. And he said that, like, the problem with a lot of people is that we don't have any management training. Like, I didn't go to university. I don't think you went to university. We haven't done an MBA or a finance degree or anything like that. So he said, what you have to do is, you know, when shit happens, you've got to ask yourself, well, what am I meant to learn from that? Because if I don't learn from it, it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
You know, and it was particularly pertaining to an employee, you know, who had caused a lot of problems for me. And then this person left. And the guy said to me, the business coach, he said to me, so what are you going to learn from that? Because if you don't learn from it, they are going to send another one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so it became my sort of management mantra. What am I meant to learn from it so that I can either reduce the damage when it happens again or restrict it from happening in the first place? And I think that that's a pretty good mantra to have as a business owner about how you deal with stuff when it goes wrong, because stuff's going to go wrong. It's just a matter of what and when and, you know, how often.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. I think there's always another problem waiting to happen. Anthony, thank you so much for coming in, mate.
I think
we could sit here and we could carry on for the rest of the day and find ourselves with 4 or 5 hours of podcast. Now, I never, ever sell on this podcast, but I really want you to mention your books, because I think your books are really usable, are really readable.
Okay, thanks.
And help.
Good.
And so I think if there are, and they're not massively expensive, so I know we're not throwing fortunes at you.
Yeah.
But I just think it could be a really good thing for people who are finding that frustration that I've certainly felt in the past, and you have.
Yeah.
To be able to delve a bit deeper into what maybe their problems are.
Yeah.
And so I think you're probably the better person to talk up your books than I am.
Okay. Well, I still do lots of seminars. And I always remember a journalist at one of the hairdressing awards said to me, you should write a book. And I was like, what do I know about writing a book? And she said, well, I'll write it for you. So she came along to all my seminars that I did, under the guise of I'm going to write a book, and never wrote a bloody book.
Right.
And at the end, I thought, well, I've got all these PowerPoints and all these seminars I do, I'm going to turn them into a book myself. So I wrote the book. I wrote the first book, and I've ended up writing four. And then I had them edited by, actually, she edited the first.
Oh, you did get some work out.
She edited the first two. So, I mean, you know, the grammar, the spelling, the punctuation, she tightened the things up. But it was basically, you know, I wrote the books. And I had a branding agency I worked with for a while. This is sort of an aside, but it's a reason why I'm saying it. And you know when you work with a branding agency, they ask you lots of questions and they try and dig in deep about who you are. And I remember the guy said to me after two or three hours of talking, he said, "Do you know what you are?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "You're the truth teller." And I thought, oh yeah, I'll have that.
Yeah.
And so I just tell it how I see it. Mm. And I tell it from hard-learned experience. Yeah. You know, I don't hold anything back. Sometimes people don't like that, but I don't hold anything back. I just tell it as I see it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I apologize if I make a mistake. But I do just try and tell the truth. So my books, you know, Super Stylist is one, Management's one, Marketing's one, and Team Building is another. And they're all about, at the coalface, stuff I learned over the years. And now I do those seminars, I do online courses, and they're all turned into books.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to get them, they can get them on my website, growmysalonbusiness.com. I'm everywhere at growmysalonbusiness.com. So
we'll stick that link up when this goes out.
Cool, thanks.
Like I say, I think the reason I did, out of everyone we looked at, I wanted to speak to you because I did think your books do cut through as our underpoint is cutting through the crap.
Cool.
And just keeping it straightforward and transparent.
Yeah, I didn't realise that was your cutting through the crap. Do you know what? I was going to call my first book Cut the Crap.
Oh, right, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, it got used in the
there
end.
There you go. Yeah, I love it.
Anthony, thank you very, very much for
my
your
pleasure.
Time. I really appreciate meeting you properly.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.